What crazy things are going to be normal in the future? Visionaries, techno-utopians, and other big thinkers paint pictures of exotic technologies to come. But of course, whenever the future does arrive, it will likely seem ordinary to us. In the new book, The Future Normal, How We Will Live, Work, and Thrive in the Next Decade, Rohit Bhargava and Henry Cotino Mason explain how the extraordinary will soon become the everyday. Henry is the former managing director of Trend Watching and author of the book Trend Driven Innovation. Rohit is a leading authority on marketing trends and innovation, the author of 8 books, and the founder of The Non-Obvious Company. Here he is to share 5 of their big ideas.
My name is Rohit Bhargava, and I believe the world needs more non-obvious thinking. I'm the co-author of a new book called The Future Normal, which features 30 trend predictions for the future. My co-author Henry Cotino Mason and I have both spent the last 15 years studying trends, doing research, speaking at global events, and writing about the future. In The Future Normal, we spotlight the ideas and instigators shaping how we'll live, work, and thrive in the next decade. In this short book bite, I'd like to share 5 big insights from the book and what they can teach you about the future. The first big insight we discovered when we were writing the book is that the only future we can build is the one we can imagine. And right now, if you look at media and entertainment and television, there's lots of stories about how we can imagine a better immediate future. We can find the partner who we've fallen in love with. We can make our lives better in the moment. We can build a better career. But when it comes to the long term, we have a failure of imagination. There's science fiction stories like Divergent or Black Mirror or The Handmaid's Tale or Snowpiercer or Westworld, and they all paint this dystopian version of the future that is scary in many ways. And if that's the future that we imagine, then that's the future that we'll eventually create, and it's having an effect. There was a recent Gallup poll that found that more than 50% of people believe that the future is unlikely to be better than the past. And when we find a way to believe this about the future, we'll probably find a way to make it happen too. We have to shape the version of the future that we want to see and help people imagine a more positive and more optimistic version of the future. The second insight from the book is that the best future is a normal one. And we realize that we put 2 words together in the title of this book that don't ordinarily come together: the future and normal. The future seems more futuristic. It seems like it is unevenly distributed, as many quotes and cliches say. Some people have it, some people don't. Some people get ahead, some people don't. When you think about normal, though, that's what's normal for everybody. And we loved this word as a framing for what the future could be, because in this book, we paint a picture of the many different innovations that could affect all of our lives, and not just the top 1%, not just the smaller group of people. And what we try to imagine is what would happen if some of these ideas and some of these instigators did actually reach that moment of normalcy. How could that achieve a better future for everyone? How do we build this normal future instead of just a selectively good one for some people? The third big insight was one that we really came to through the development of the research for the book. We understood that in order to write about the possible future normal, we had to ask big questions. And so in every chapter, we focus on a big question that then leads us to the discussion of the trend that is in that chapter. We open the book asking questions about identity, entertainment, and media. In the multiversal identity chapter, we ask, what if we could all be our real and most authentic selves, both online and offline, and explore the many ways that we're taking our identities and putting them into the multiverse, social media, and into real life as well, and how those relate to one another? When we wrote about stealth learning, the question we asked is, what if you could educate yourself using the very videos and games that are typically written off as a waste of time? In the chapter we focused on and featured Roblox as an example. In the chapter on immersive entertainment, we ask, what if you could be part of entertainment instead of watching it passively? And share the example of the ABBA Voyage experience, and talk about how entertainment itself is shifting to be more immersive as we can live inside the story. In our chapter titled Ending Loneliness, we ask, what if closing the generation gap could cure loneliness at any age? And we tell the story of an apartment complex in Sweden called Salbo, which has an unusual clause in their contracts where residents must agree to socialize with their neighbors for at least 2 hours a week. Three groups call the 51 apartments in the building home. People over 70 occupy about half the apartments, and the rest are rented to young adults between 18 and 25, and 10 apartments are for those who arrived in Sweden as refugees. Most people living in that apartment complex report feelings of connection and an amazing well-being. Turning our attention to the workplace, we ask, what if work flexibility meant sharing your job equally with a partner? We also explore the fascinating new world of impact hubs, office spaces that contribute to the local economy and community by bringing corporations and nonprofits together. We tackle the topic of AI in the workplace, writing in our chapter on augmented creativity, what if artificial intelligence could make humans more creative? In our chapter on good governing, we tackle the difficult truth that today's good government can become tomorrow's cautionary tale. And so it's easy to become a skeptic of the idea that good government can ever be anything more than an accident of fate. Yet in the chapter, we explore how good governing is happening all over governments across the world. And if we spotlight those examples, perhaps we can champion them to have more good governing. One of the most controversial ideas from the book comes in our chapter on making weather, where we ask, what if humans could control and even make the weather? And we talk about how the unfortunate truth is that cooling the planet, if we could do it, wouldn't benefit everyone equally. The hottest places suffering from drought and heat waves would likely experience a relief, while other regions might end up suffering more disruptive weather patterns that affect crops or life. And the most popular idea for doing this, which is called cloud seeding, is highly visible but has mostly been explored for frivolous reasons, such as making sure that it doesn't rain on people's wedding days, or potentially deadly ones. And so the challenge is, if we do come to this point where we need to exert some sort of control on the weather because of extreme weather events already happening, how will we do it? Who will be responsible for doing it? And how will we decide what's allowable and what's ethical and what isn't? Questions were really at the foundation of how we approached the way we were going to write about the future. By asking these questions, we can imagine a more positive way of these trends impacting the world. And if we ask the right questions, then we can make sure that those do get implemented in a more positive and optimistic way. Fourth big insight from the book relates to a question that we're asked really often, which is, how do you keep up with all of these changes, and how do you keep current when everything is shifting so quickly? Just in the last 3 years, in the process of writing this book, when it first started, we were during the pandemic and everyone was going on to a vocal app called Clubhouse to have conversations with one another and just find companionship through audio. By the waning days of the book, when we were putting everything together, everyone was experimenting with AI and trying to figure out how ChatGPT in particular would change the way that they do business or maybe make some types of roles vastly different than they were before. Even in that period of time, we saw dramatic changes. And what we realized is that if we're going to write about the future and really help people understand what matters, we can't focus on the technology of the moment. We have to instead focus on the human elements of these technologies. How do they make us feel more secure? How do they make us more optimized with our time? How do they help us to share our identity with the world? What do they mean for our reputation? These are the human basic elements that we really have to pay attention to. And anytime we study the future, we try and study human behavior alongside it, because that's really the way to understand what's shifting and what's changing the way that we think. If we could focus on the reaction to these technologies and the ways that people are using them instead of the technologies themselves, then we can come to a better understanding of the future. Keeping up with changes is less important than keeping up with what's actually shifting our behaviors related to the changes. The final insight I'd like to share related to the book is that the future is not about technology. It's about the ingenuity of people and what we can achieve working together. And this book was about the future that we choose to imagine. And now it's up to us to build it together. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope this short audio introduction and summary was really interesting and valuable for you, and I hope you pick up the book as well.
Thank you, Rohit. That was five big ideas from The Future Normal, How We Will Live, Work, and Thrive in the Next Decade by Rohit Bhargava and Henry Cotino Mason. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.